I'll just try to give you a perspective from energy side, the way I look at things. And instead of just going down directly to the situation in India and what's happening, I'll try to give a more global perspective, then we can bring it down to see how we address the issues that we face in our cities today and how we can go for regenerative townships. Okay. So can I please start? So if I understood correctly, I've just come in, so I'm not aware of what was discussed yesterday. I'm sorry about it. I would have loved to be there yesterday so that I would follow up in the same manner, but I've tried to gather whatever was discussed yesterday. I've just come in this morning. So I will. What I understood was the workshop is focusing on addressing two questions. The first one is, what characterizes a regenerative township? So we need to understand what is regenerative. And especially in the context of a country like India, where we have yet to establish things. We need to have more cities, we need to have more spaces constructed. So are we talking about regeneration or are we talking about generating first time? So we need to look at that aspect. Then how can we move towards regenerative townships from where we are now? Okay. Obviously, we have already cities which are there and we're looking at how to transform those cities. But at the same time, we have a need. We'll see the numbers so that you can understand the challenges that we have. And again, I've tried to take into account some of the discussions that were held yesterday and link with them. Because as you know, energy is all pervasive. It's not just about electricity or fans or lights. So we'll try to see how it's linked with the other sessions that you had yesterday and you're going to have this afternoon. What is the dictionary definition? I tried to look into what is regenerative. Renewal or restoration of a body, bodily part, or biological system as a forest after injury or as a normal process. This is what the dictionary defines it. So how do you link that with the cities? It also says spiritual renewal and or revival. So I feel it's the right place we are in. Auroville gives us the right platform to discuss this issue because we're talking about regenerative link with spiritual renewal or revival. Okay. Why regenerative township? Okay. The Spanish philosopher says, I am I plus my surroundings. And if I do not preserve the latter, I do not preserve myself. And there's a lot of thinking behind it. And we can summarize all that we are going to discuss into this particular sentence. Okay. So we're talking about preserving ourselves. If you're doing regeneration, is to preserve ourselves, otherwise we will become extinct. We means the human race. All of you have gone through this document. I'm just going to start off with that. How we have evolved, starting from agropolis. This went on for centuries till we found oil. Okay. For millions of years, we did not know the potential of oil. And suddenly we discovered about 100 years back and things changed. We went from agropolis to petropolis. And what have we done in the last century? You have seen the type of progress we have noticed in our lifestyle. Okay. You look at the end of 20th century and the beginning of 21st century. Okay. Within one century we have seen the changes. But at the same time, we have not realized that we have dwindled 50% of all the oil resources that we have in one century. What took millions of years to build. And if you're talking about regenerative systems, you're talking about how to sustain them. If at the rate of, in 100 years, if you're going to dwindle that by 50%, you can imagine what's going to happen at the end of this century. And we are not looking at solutions. And if you look at most of the vision statements, whether it's international vision statements, national vision statements, look at the European Union. People talk about, you know, they talk about European Union's visions are far ahead of the others. They talk about 3x20. I don't know if you have heard about 3x20. by 2020, Europe wants to achieve 20% of renewable energy, 20% of energy efficiency, 20% of, and 20% reduction in emissions. 20% of renewable energy, where does the rest come from? So we are still talking about a world which is dependent on oil. And we don't realize that we have already depleted 50% of all the oil in one century. And that's how the West was built. And we have to understand that the era of cheap oil is over. We have to look at other options. If we don't start looking at it now, it will be too late. So we are still imagining that we have the same pattern of growth, thinking that we'll have the cheap oil era as the West had. So of course, we need to go from petropolis to what we're talking about, ecopolis. And that's where all the regeneration comes in. The different ideas, we're talking about how renewable energy can replace the oil. But I'd like to humbly submit today that renewable energy alone will not do. When you're talking about energy, we have to look at other aspects. So I'll go through quickly a few slides to introduce it before we start the discussion. Now I'm coming to what's happening in Asia. And you know, Asia, when you talk about Asia, we're talking about China and India mostly. Because these two countries represent more than 80% of Asia, 80 to 85% of Asia. So you can see less than 40% of the population living in the cities, but every day we add 137,000 people. You can imagine what size we're talking about. And Europe, you go to cities or towns which have smaller number of people than this. So every day we are adding one more town, and you're talking about regenerative towns. Do we have to talk about regenerative towns or to plan new towns where we can have, right from the beginning, the right steps so that we don't have to go through the whole process? We expect to have about 2.7 billion by 2030. What is it that is driving this growth? You've seen industrialization. Asia has become the production house of the world. We supply things to the rest of the world. Okay. And we've seen the globalization effect is taking away the barriers, so it becomes even easier for things to move. We saw in the last slides, talked about how things move from one place to another, and all that has impacts on energy. The other aspect I would like to talk about is, we are not only talking about the elites, we're talking about the growth that is taking, how inequitable it is. More than 40% of the people live in urban slums. A country like India, 87% of all the electricity which is generated in the country goes to the cities. And yet, there are about 30% of the urban population who don't have access to electricity. Let's forget about the rural areas. Even in the urban areas where you have a high tension line going, people don't have access to electricity for various reasons. And I'm sure we have discussed some of the points yesterday, especially when you talked about planning and as well as resource management. I just wanted to give a few figures so that we keep that in mind. So there is a limit to growth. We talk about we can achieve growth by adopting certain processes, but there is a limit to growth. And again, I would understand Mohan would have covered these aspects of carbon footprints, ecological footprints that we have and how we have exceeded that. So I won't go into that in detail. If, for example, if you, all of us would like to live like humans, we need to decrease our numbers by 1 billion. Is that possible? Is that something that we can think of? There you go.
Sorry.
No, no, no problem. I think we need to start again.
Switch on.
So you can see Cuba is one of the examples where they have achieved. You know, if I don't know if you showed the slide where you.
Yes, Peter covered that about the HDI and the
Human Development Index. So I would talk a little bit about Human Development Index. So we're talking about one, how to make sure that there's an inclusive growth, so people, everybody comes to a certain level. On the other side, we have resource constraints. Okay? And energy happens to be one of the resources. Okay? And if you look at this, the diagram, you see there is only one country or one or two countries which are within that HDI, high HDI, and low carbon footprint or low ecological footprint. That happens to be Cuban. So as I said, if you all had to have a lifestyle of that of a Cuban, we'd like to reduce, we have to reduce our population by 1 billion and which is not something that we can think of. Not to forget the fact that if the Cubans were given a choice, they won't be there. They would be like their neighbor Americans. So there's something else which is holding them. It's not happening automatically. Okay. If they were given to have their own way of doing things, then they would have adopted a lifestyle of an American, not that of a Cuban. It has happened for certain reasons. So can we think about how to go in that direction? You know how much we dependent on fossil fuels. As I mentioned, last century we have depleted 50% of all the oil. And we're continuing in the same direction. There is no way to look at, you know, we're talking about consuming more and more, not reducing it. And we have all these plans of how to bring in 10% renewable here, 15% renewable there. At the same time, we don't realize our demand keeps on increasing, which means our dependence on oil keeps on increasing. There have been, you know, initiatives, for example, you see in Switzerland, there is a society where they talk about how to have a society of 2 kilowatt. But even that 2 kilowatt society is not going to take us anywhere because it's far beyond what we can afford today. We are talking about 1 kilowatt per person. In India, the government talks about 1 kilowatt hour per person per day. But we forget to mention that 1 kilowatt hour per hour per person is not uniformly distributed. When you have 45% of the people don't even have access to electricity. So are we talking about equitably distributed energy services? The longer we continue to depend on our current way of development, the more painful it's going to be. Okay? So the question is whether we wait. We have seen civilizations have come and gone. They've reached the zenith and they've vanished. They vanished because they didn't learn from history. Are we going to repeat the history and then vanish? Should you start thinking about how we can go in another direction? This is where you can see the Human Development Index. And I've just taken the number in terms of electricity per capita because you can't imagine life in any urban center without electricity today. What does this show? We have countries, mostly the Asian countries are somewhere in this area. You can see India is somewhere there, which means our human development index is quite low. Our energy consumption is quite low. We have an option. Either we can take the direction of countries like Japan, which is supposed to be very efficient, or New Zealand, or we can follow, like we have seen Cuba, or you can see Mexico, for example, which has achieved high human development index, not at the cost of using more energy. And there have been studies done which show that the quality of life does not necessarily increase by consuming more energy. But unfortunately, we are using indicators of development in terms of how many kilowatt hour per person. And again, I think Mohan covered that aspect. How do we come up with new types of indices, new types of indicators of growth? So what are our challenges? One is, even there, many people don't have access to energy. How do you provide them access to, I would say not energy, energy services? We need to make a distinction between energy and energy services. How can you have access to more energy services using less resources? So decouple energy use with economic growth. We all talk about GDP growth and the indicators are talking about how efficient your economy in terms of how much oil you're using and how much carbon you're emitting. And we need to move towards low carbon strategies because we have seen the impact of oil use or fossil fuel use on the environment. We all are aware about the problems of climate change and global warming. We can't deny that, and that's again going to hit the people, those who are at the bottom of the pyramid. Now, when I talk about energy, I said it's not just about electricity. Talk about any modern day living requirements, essentials. Housing, and many of your architects. We are not only talking about energy consumption, we are talking about the energy which goes into building itself. Industry, transportation, water supply, waste management, all these areas you'll see there is a link to energy. We don't see it implicitly, but there is a link with energy. And we'll see, if we don't think it in a more systemic manner, we'll end up having all these resources, requirement of resources growing with time. Now, what is important to understand here is we are looking at energy services which are forming the backbone of our urban centers today. How can you provide similar energy services using much less amount of energy and creating less impact on the environment? This also, I think, I'm sure Mohan would have covered this, the linear process of things happening, linear metabolism of cities. Cities are like parasites. What do the cities contribute to? GDP. Everything else, they look upon the resources. So we go from resources coming from outside, not generated in the cities. We produce, distribute, use them. We generate waste. Again, I don't have the time to go through the numbers, so that I could share with you some numbers, and it goes out as waste. So it's a linear process of doing things, taking the resources, dumping them as waste. And there isn't enough resource for us to take from somewhere and dump it somewhere else as waste. So we need to look at how we can go away from this linear metabolism to circular metabolism by tackling the resources and closing the loop within the city. Is it possible? And there are many solutions today where we can see how we can use our resources in an efficient manner and go on using them over and over again so that we don't have to go back to the hinterland to take those resources. And I'll give you a few quick examples to illustrate that. Okay, so you can see on one side, we reduce the requirement from the resources and we are dumping less waste. So when I talk about sustainability challenges, I look at, we talk about sufficiency, and to me that's very important for developing countries, because otherwise we are talking about many things that we don't want to compromise on quality of life. That's what's happening in the West today. We're first trying to address the issue of sufficiency, enough for all. And you can see new models of development coming up. When you go to Bhutan, they talk about gross happiness index. The King of Thailand talks about how to have sufficiency economy. What does it mean? We need to translate that. So we start with sufficiency, and we can see how the potential for conservation and efficiency, and finally we look at renewables and technologies which are coming in. I'll add on to that something else. This is what how we see today energy sustainability. So how can you build smart cities? I'm not only talking about regenerate, because I said every day we are adding 137,000 people, which means we have to create new cities. How can you plan new cities? What is required for this to happen? Okay. Which is on high on energy sustainability right from the beginning. What is required for that? I just try to give you the whole process, what happens, and then we'll understand how we use energy today. Let's take fossil fuels, because that's where our economy is based on today. Starting with primary energy, you can see how we go through the energy conversion facilities. We have refinery, of course, we have transportation in between. Then it goes to secondary conversion. Then we transmit and distribute them through pipelines, electrical grids. Final energy is delivered to consumers. We use it for certain services. We provide the energy services through which we can carry out activities. For example, the projector now is able to project something that we want to, many people can see together. And that's the service that you're providing. But you see, behind that, there is a whole chain. For every system, we can see there is a chain. I'll take up one particular example, which I like to show. Lighting, which is the easiest one. And today, all the world's electricity, about almost one-fifth of that goes for lighting alone. We depend on coal in India, China. We start with coal, go through the power plant, the transmission grid, we use a lamp, provide radiant energy because the lamp that we use is an incandescent lamp. What do you find here? Power plant efficiency, 35%. So if we start with 100 units of coal, we have only 35 units of electricity available. Transmission distribution losses, I'm talking about very conservative figures. I'm not talking about the real figures. Real figures are even much lower than this, especially in the case of India, and due to technical and non-technical reasons. Then comes the lamp, which we use at home. What is the efficiency of that lamp? Hardly 10%. So if you combine all the three of them in the chain, you start with primary energy 100, you get electricity 30, 35, after transmission distribution you have 31, you're using the lamp, the energy service that you provide is only free. So in the whole chain, we get the energy service, that's what we are interested in, which comes to only three. And we are starting with sources, which are 100. Our overall efficiency of conversion of this chain is 3%. Yes, please.
There's one more. The man showing reading the book, 359 degrees of that light is getting wasted. Only 1 degree is missing. Actually,
Thank you. I'll come to that. I would have. And then, you know, today we are so used to it, you go to many places, lights are on. They use incandescent lamp, they're on all the time. Okay. So we can see already, that's why I said I'm talking about conservative figures. It's even worse than that. 3%, can you imagine a system where, you know, it's like you go to a restaurant, you order Coke. People drink Coke, you order Coke, and the boy comes and serves you Coke with 3% of liquid and 97% of bubble. Would you accept that? And that's what happens every day. Because we don't know the whole story. So we need to understand the whole story of what happens. How can you do more with less? How can you act locally first? And I think again, Mohan has mentioned about how to start locally. And again, my talk will be more about, the introduction will be more about how do you start locally? We can talk about governments doing things, but we can wait for centuries for governments to do something. We can act. We can start. We can show the way. And today, governments do not have that type of vision. They learn from people. Today, the government is learning from private sector. If the private sector knows what they want to do, if they do it for the good of the society, then we'll see good policies coming up. Similarly, you can see the civil society. How can you lead? Just see, if we have the same service, I'm not talking about reducing the services, we change from incandescent lamp to compact fluorescent lamp. Most people say it's expensive to move from a lamp which is 15 rupees to a lamp which is 150 rupees, 10 times more expensive. Why should I pay 10 times more to buy a lamp where I can get 10 number of lamps? But you see the impact of that. How gradually everything is divided. When it comes to coal, instead of 100 units of coal, we require only 25 units of coal. There we have achieved what we call the factor 4. Okay. Factor 4 is you are going to provide the same services using 4 times less resources. It's not all that difficult. But you have to act at the right point. But instead of that, what are we doing? All our planning processes are looking at how can you put a bigger power plant to supply to more people. You can see here with the same existing infrastructure of the power plant which is there, now we can provide services to 5 people instead of 1 person. So we can satisfy the needs of more people. Instead of putting the money in power plant, we need to put the money in changing the incandescent lamp to compact fluorescent lamp. And you can achieve factor 4. And I can see the same can go for many other systems. Now look at the economics. I just wanted to give you quick figures because you say, all right, it's 15 rupees and 150 rupees. Who is going to pay for it? Now let's look at the whole story. To avoid a kilowatt, we've seen if you're changing a lamp from 60 watts to 15 watts, you're going to save 45 watts, what we call negative 45 watts. If you want to save a kilowatt, you require to replace by 22 lamps. And 22 lamps, if you take the highest price, we're talking about even almost 200 rupees per lamp. Cost is something like 4,000 rupees. So to eliminate, to avoid the need for a kilowatt, we have to spend about 4,000 rupees. To invest in a generation capacity, a coal-fired power plant, our requirement is minimum 40,000 rupees or more. So which is cheaper? Is it cheaper to put a power plant or to replace the incandescent lamp by compact fluorescent? We have a choice. This is the first one in terms of the initial investment. Let's go further. Where will you get this compact fluorescent lamp? You have to put up a production facility. How much does it cost if you say a lamp producing 3 million lamps per year? It will avoid over its life of 10 years, economic life of 10 years, 1,350 megawatt at a cost of investment of 0.75 to 1 billion rupees. If you are to generate the same 1,350 megawatt, you will have to have an investment of 60 billion rupees. And mind you, the investment in a power plant represents about 20%, around 20% of the production cost of every unit of electricity. 80% is due to the fuel. And we know that we are running out of the fuel sources. So you can see this is a typical example of how we put our money in the wrong place in our planning process. This is just a very simple example. I can go into 20 other examples, but I don't have the time. And I would like to go for discussion to see how we find solutions to overcome the problems. I wanted to show you the examples. This factor 4 I talked about, dividing the resource requirement by 4. Take the case of Malaysia. A normal building consumes something between 200 to 300 kilowatt hour. I know I'm already taking away Sanjay's speech this afternoon, but if you can see some numbers, you can see how the government has led the way to go for what they call low energy building. They put up this low energy building in 2001 to show that you can divide already by more than 2. They didn't stop there. They went for what they call zero energy office building, where the consumption has come down and they go for renewable energy. Thanks to this low building, they have come up with the energy conservation building guideline in 2006, which says that you can bring it down to less than 100 kilowatt hour, and that shows the factor 4. So it's possible for us to achieve factor 4 if we lead the way, show it can be done, and they have done the cost-benefit analysis. To go from a normal building to low-energy building, the additional cost in the beginning was something like 8%. And many of you practitioners have seen, those who are into LEED building construction, that how it's becoming comparable to standard building practices. As the market transformation takes place, we'll find new solutions. And let's take it further. We saw that in the power plant, only about 35 units were being converted, 65 units were lost. Today, you can have mechanism by which you recover those heat. Don't let them go waste. Use it on site. This is an example of all of you have seen this twin tower in Kuala Lumpur. They decided to generate the power on site, recover the heat, use the heat for cooling of buildings. So you go from factor 4 to factor 8. Same energy services. I've not even talked about changing of lifestyle changes or anything else. Same energy services, you can divide your resource requirement by 8 times. In other words, population is not an issue. If the population grows, we'll find new solutions by which we can achieve ways to provide more energy services with the same resources or less resources. This is the example of the airport of Bangkok. They've gone a step further. They've even tried to extract more out of it. So out of this fuel that they burn, they get electricity, they get heating, they get cooling, all the three out of that. So you go to factor 10. So here you can see the same services which are being provided by which you can achieve factor 10. Now the challenge for us is to replicate that, widen it further so that we can do it for our buildings, for our industry, for our commerce, for our transportation, for our agriculture sector. We can all achieve this factor 10 just by bringing in. We have the technology today which is already there. And mind you, this what I've shown you earlier, not at a higher cost. You can actually do that at a lower cost. So cost is not an issue, technology is not an issue. We have the solutions and yet we don't do it. And that's where you bring in. You can see as we go for, and it can be achieved only through mostly energy efficiency. But at one point of time, as you see, as we go further and further in reducing our energy consumption, getting higher and higher factor, we can see there is a point where renewable energy becomes more cost effective. And that's where we bring in renewable energy. We don't have to depend on the remaining oil sources. We don't have to tap it in the next 50 years. Leave it for the future generation. We can find other ways by which we can achieve it cost effectively. Today, renewable energy at certain point of time catches up with energy efficiency, where we have already achieved factor 10 and we switch over to renewable energy. Now again, perhaps I will not take too much time on it. I would just like to show how we are building today. This is our climatic condition today. outdoor environment is at a certain temperature, and we talk about comfort zone, where we are away. For example, in this room, you can feel we're not feeling that comfortable because the humidity is high. Okay? And there are climates where you can't just achieve comfort by just by natural means, but we make our buildings more uncomfortable by designing them wrongly. You can see we are creating heat island effect. Again, I'm sure Mohan would have definitely talked about it yesterday. By creating heat island effect, we keep on increasing. We create a microclimate. We take the wrong orientation. We don't have solar protection in most of our buildings. Even those so-called LEED certified buildings, they're not, don't have any solar protection. They're oriented in the wrong manner. I know that many of you are involved in that, but I would like to point it out. It's not necessary for us to go for that type of architecture and then bring in technological aspects to correct it. Then we bring in wrong type of building materials, which again increase the temperature, and inside we use more and more appliances. And you can see outdoor is better. You can live outside is better than when you finished our standard building. We already have a created microclimate inside where we need more cooling. Especially I'm talking about tropical climates. We could do it in another way. If you look at low energy building design, we can go the other way. I won't go through the details. We do just the opposite of what we've been doing. We'll find solution already. By the time we come there, we'll be very close to the comfort zone. We don't really require any air conditioning. We don't require any energy intensive solutions. We can find that time renewable energy solutions to meet that, because we have gone into passive systems where we don't have to invest too much. It's a question of how you design it. And very often when you design it, it's not going to cost you more. It's going to reduce your cost somewhere. And we have seen how the losses are multiplying in the chain. If we are reducing our energy services, automatically our investment required on equipment, etc., come down. And on the whole, we get the benefits. These buildings are already there. We don't have to invent them. They're already there. These are the buildings. For example, this building is energy positive building. It produces more energy than it requires. So we can, instead of making buildings which are resource intensive, can you design buildings which are already giving us more energy than that they require? Solar power systems are a reality today. Even in India, we don't have to go very far. Earlier we talked about Japan. We talked about Germany. Feed-in tariff, today we have it in India also. So, we've seen earlier, I talked about sustainability, I talked about sufficiency, efficiency, and judicious choice of energy resources. I'm going to add one more layer on top of it. And that is very critical, and that's why I said it has something to do with our spirit. We bring in the spiritual aspects there. We need to make a distinction between what is our need and want, need or greed. I'm sure many of you are familiar with what Mahatma Gandhi said about need and greed. So if you are not making the distinction between need and greed, because our greed is infinite, whatever solutions we can bring in terms of technology, in terms of planning, in terms of management, we are not going to achieve that ultimate goal. But if you bring that in already, you can see if our demands were on top of this triangle, just by doing that, we're already bringing down to a certain level. We can use designing approaches by which we can bring it down further. We have seen how we can design our infrastructure. How can you make what we call green infrastructure, which makes sense in terms of starting from the end point, whether it's for buildings, whether it's for transportation, whether it's for water supply, sanitation, or waste management. Each of them, the solution that I showed, you could have similar type of chains. Then we bring in efficiency. Technology is already there. We're not talking about futuristic technologies. With the existing technology which is there in the market, we are already down to this. You can see, when you have divided our requirement by more than 10, I said from here to there, I'm talking about factor 10. If you add on to that, we're talking about factor 20, factor 30. It depends on how we use it. Then our requirement of renewable energy is not much. So we don't have to cover all our rooftops with thousands of square meters, millions of square meters of solar panels to provide our requirements. We require much less than that. And we can do it in an affordable manner. we need to start at individual level. I know there will be discussion about what the governments can do, but we need to take our individual responsibility. We need to start from ourselves. And that's where I said it's very individual. We have to have a good understanding of what the issues are and how we can deal with it. We're talking about the future generation. All the assets that we build for the future generation, we talk about our children and their children. And here we are going towards a destructive society where we are actually killing the branch, cutting the branch on which we are sitting. So we need to start from individual level. We'll find solutions for the individual level. Where we cannot, we go for neighborhood and community level. And then we can go beyond so that we can go away from the linear functioning of systems, how to close the loop at the level where it is feasible today. And we'll find new solutions to it. We have buildings today that provide comfort, they improve well-being of people, they can generate energy, they can harvest water. We have buildings that can produce food, they can convert organic waste into compost. In Bangalore, there are people already doing it. Okay? All your wet waste need not go out of your house. If everybody did that, can you imagine in a city where about 40 to 50% of organic waste is there in the solid waste which goes out into the dump yard? If 50% is taken away, used on site, what is the benefit that you can think of that is becoming compost, that becomes your resource for greening your plants, producing food at home? And then you look at the benefit in terms of transportation mechanism. We don't have to have all these big lorries carrying the waste and dumping it somewhere else 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 kilometers away. We don't have to bring the water 300 kilometers away uphill to provide to people where people leave the tap open. We can all analyze this. How much water do we require to brush our teeth? We do this exercise and find with running tap, we are wasting water from anything between 5 to 10 liters. And we all know that we can do it for less than a liter or half a liter. So there is a factor 10 already. But that tap that you require, we are too lazy to open the tap and close the tap. We can find new ways. We have sensor-based tap that costs money. But we have to decide where to put the money. If you put the money on sensor-based tap or the infrastructure that we are digging up every 10 years, changing the pipeline, we can extract it, extrapolate it to all urban services that we provide. So you can see we are putting the money in the wrong place and then you're complaining about not having enough. Okay. So we need to first see where we can reduce our losses. And there are many areas where you can reduce the losses. Okay. We can close the loop, for example, individual level. We have solutions like we have government policies where they're talking about renewable portfolio standards. Solar cities, India is talking about solar cities. Again, it cannot just happen at the government level if people don't take it up as a movement. What we can't do within the city, we can do it by solar wind farms. We produce some errors. This morning when I was coming with Tripti, I was discussing, I use a Reva car. I said, I'm not that proud of riding a Reva car because it's halfway solution. Okay, I'm a clean car, but I use dirty fuel. I wrote to the Reva company, I didn't get any response. My proposal was, can they work with their clients who are ready to pay more for greening themselves? Can they go for a wind turbine power plant and ask the same people to invest so that they can say that the electricity that they use is coming from renewable energy? We need to go all the way. Many of the things that you see, we do it symbolically. We don't go all the way. How do we achieve that? And again, as I said, we can have national policies, but if it doesn't happen locally, and that's where local authorities, cities, towns can lead the way, we need to talk about how to bring in the right policy instruments. We need to look at integrated energy planning. There are sessions on planning. How do we bring in integrated energy planning tools where we become much more aware about what are the costs and what are the benefits, what are the impacts? And then we can make informed decision. Today, for example, we go to buy an appliance, a refrigerator. Today there is a label which tells you, if you buy this, this is what you're going to consume, this is what you're going to pay. That is informed decision making. Many things nobody explains to us what are the impacts of doing certain activities. So how do you bring in the planning tools, ways to see how you provide the services using much less resources, involving people. How to bring in that collective awareness and the decision making by involving the urban dwellers. Last thing is very important, how to say no to mega projects. Most of our urban decision makers are looking for mega projects and they're proud of saying that this is what the sizes that we're talking about. How do you reverse that? How do you find innovative, localized solutions to gain social and environmental benefits? Now, to conclude, I would just like to put a few points to take it up from there so that you can discuss. I think our group is too big. Perhaps we should make it to smaller groups to discuss about what is it that is stopping us, hindering, to achieve all that has been shown here. Okay. Again, if you ask me, I can give you more details of how things will happen. How to make resources more efficient? To address the demand first. We don't address the demand in a correct manner, so that we minimize our wastage. How do you make this transition towards alternative solutions that will have less impact on the environment or the climate change? And especially, which will create employment opportunity for people. Many solutions are there where they will create more employment opportunities. I give the example of power plant. If you have a 100 megawatt power plant today, it can be run by 20 people. But if you want to save that 100 megawatt, you can create 20,000 employment, especially in the context of a country like India. You'll have to create a network of service providers. So how do you create options for employment for population which is excluded from the society today? Spatial planning, I'm sure you'll be talking more about it. How to close the material and energy loops, and how to handle the mobility. This afternoon we have a session on mobility. I'm sure you're going to discuss about this more in detail. How to sensitize people, because people are going to be the decision maker. How to sensitize them, how to encourage them by bringing in the right type of policies, right type of incentives, so that the consumers become what I call prosumer. Every consumer realizes that I can meet a part of what I need, what I consume. And then you'll see how responsible we become. Because if we don't know how difficult or easy it is to produce what we consume, we don't appreciate it. We all can produce a part of what we consume in terms of all resources, whether it's energy or water or raw material, etc. It's possible today. So how do you make the right type of policies, regulations and incentives to push people to become prosumers? How do you develop what we call smart growth? We all like to be smart. And how do you make it fashionable so that people see that this is the way of smart growth, the other one is not? It may be in the horizon of 10 years or 20 years, but in the long term, smart growth means we have to bring in not these incremental changes, but drastic changes in our lifestyle. And that's very important. I talked about need versus greed. How to influence the changes in the mindset of urban dwellers so that they understand and they take their own responsibility, they go for decentralized solutions, more democratic, more participative, and more pro-pro. So with these few slides, I wanted to just give the introduction to what the energy issues are in the urban context, to show you that solutions exist. It's a question of how you look at it. Now we can discuss further. I'll just stop with this slide. Again from Mahatma Gandhi, who says, the rich should live simply so that the poor may simply live. And this is how true it is, you can see, when you're talking about how many people are excluded in the whole system. So I've taken a little bit more than what I was supposed to take, but I understand that there are not that many presentations afterwards. Are you going to have the presentations afterwards?
First of all, thanks a lot.